You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Teresa Rebeck and Bobby Cannavale are making their Broadway debuts with a new play called Mauritius. She's the playwright, of course, and he's one of the stars. It's about complicated relationships, buried motives, attempted cons, and two half-sisters who share a disastrous family history and a potentially valuable stamp collection. The play is produced by the Manhattan Theater Club. It's currently playing at the Biltmore Theater on West 47th Street, and it is with great pleasure that I welcome Teresa Rebeck and Bobby Cannavale to the show today. Hello.
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 You've both been part of any number of well-received off-Broadway productions. Does a Broadway debut still really mean something?
Yes.
Yes,
it's just been thrilling. I the first day that we went to the theater, Bobby and I were walking around, and I burst into tears. I actually did. I never thought, well, because there's...
You always saw yourself as an off-Broadway type
play,
right?
Well, you know, there's a lot of talk now that it's very difficult for the straight play on Broadway. And, you know, I really do write. That's what I write, is straight plays. I don't write musicals. And so at some point, you sort of get it ground into your poor little imagination that you will never be on Broadway just because you write straight plays. And so it was really thrilling to find that that was not true.
Although it has been changing in recent years. There was a time when it was only musicals and mostly from Britain, or revivals. Right. And now we're starting to see dramas do well again. But in this case, it's also the Manhattan Theater Club. When they bought the Biltmore Theater and redid it, they found a way to do both what they did and Broadway at the same time.
Yeah, I think they're a great force now in the development and support of new plays and in these larger venues where a wider audience can see them.
Bobby, do actors still aspire to play Broadway, or is it breaking into the movies and TV that really matters?
No, for me, it was broad. I always wanted to have a theater career, and I never had the good pleasure to be on Broadway. And you know, it's funny. It's that thing of Times Square and that whole area, it's so much more tolerable when you actually work there. I love going in and coming out of a big building with a huge picture of myself on it.
There's also a lot of
energy.
A lot of energy in the area.
Yeah.
And that probably contributes to the
excitement.
And
you're part of a community that I think is very tight. You know, we go to the same places after the show, and everybody that's in the theaters around the area, you know, that's why it's called the Theater District. Everybody goes out and hangs together, and you know, you're part of a community, which was always what I was looking for anyway. And I think you find that in the theater a lot easier than you do in the other mediums.
And I have to say, I think the play looks beautiful in that space. There's something really mm-hmm. elegant and historic about those old buildings that provides a kind of lift of, I don't know, it's just so beautiful.
The theater is really, really beautiful. The theater is worth it. When we went in there, when there was nothing in there, and it was, you would want to take a tour of that place. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Yes, Mae West was arrested there. We found out all the history. That's the
she
thing.
Did sex at that theater?
I believe so. And No Exit had its first performance there. I mean, you find out all the sort of great.
Well, it's also
a few
the
other
acoustics.
People who did sex in that theater too.
Well, her play was called Sex. She really knew how to push those buttons, didn't she? Is it fair to say that Bobby's character is, as much as anyone, a kind of fulcrum around which the play revolves? Starting from the first scene, it's kind of clear that nothing will happen without him.
That is absolutely true. There was one point when when Bobby and I were talking about the character, and I finally came out and said something that another actor had spoken to me about in an earlier reading of it, that if everyone would just do what Dennis says, the world would be a better place and everything would work out. And he's very much a trickster figure who can kind of travel between all different worlds and find himself at home there in both legitimate and illegitimate ways.
A hustler who might be a con man. Is it? How do you think Dennis sees himself?
I think actually this exactly what Teresa said. I think he sees himself. I think he sees himself as somebody who, if everybody just listened to, things would be okay. Nobody would get screwed in the end, and we'd all have a good time along the way.
He's charming.
And I think he enjoys what he's doing, and I think he's, like a lot of people, you know, looking for the next big thing and how that can contribute to the excitement of his life. And it's one life to live, and he's completely aware of the moment that he's in, and he doesn't have much regard for what's come before. And I think that's kind of a great philosophy, and he keeps it to the very end.
All the roles get very intense. You have to pace yourself during the day. to have the energy to do this every night?
Yeah. I mean, I don't consciously think about it, but I kind of do the same thing every day. Whether I realize it or not, my life's routine is kind of the same. And that's one of the great things about doing a play, you go in and, sure, I get to the theater at 7 and I'm out at 10. It's really only 3 hours, but my whole day is really leading up to that evening. And I'm thinking about lines and I'm thinking about new ideas and I just... It's a fantastic way to live your life.
So it changes every night? Because this is an ensemble production. Okay. It's really impossible to imagine anyone playing Sterling better than F. Murray Abraham.
That's absolutely true. It's been a great pleasure for both of us who have had a sort of life. I think both Bobby and I have had kind of lifelong admiration for Murray. It was a great thrill when he came on.
So you knew each other before?
Bobby and I?
Yeah.
Yeah, we've known each other for a while now, couple years.
Yeah.
You've worked in other plays together?
Yeah, we did a
pilot
together.
Years ago doing Third Watch.
Yeah.
Like 8, 9 years ago.
Yeah, I did one episode of this show.
Yeah. In my first season there. And then we did a pilot together a few years ago here in New York for CBS.
Did you write this with him in mind?
This play?
Yeah.
I didn't. That rumor is out there. I have to say, I'm actually pretty proud of Dennis as a creation that came out of some strange corner of my brain. And as soon as I was finished with it and knew that we would be doing it in New York, Bobby was the first person I thought of for it and who I went to for it, because it does seem like an extraordinarily fortuitous fit of actor and character. And I knew he had both the wit and the masculinity and the street smarts to play it. And the command of language. And, a lot of times with my plays, you can't have somebody who doesn't know how to handle language.
So you get involved with the casting of your plays.
Yeah, so yes.
It begins with a young, seemingly insecure woman walking into a store trying to get a collection of stamps evaluated. And this is a part of a disputed inheritance, we learn later. But it could have been anything. How did it wind up stamps?
I had been thinking about, my husband tells me, you've been thinking about a valuable object play for a long time. Honestly, about 10 years ago, I got really interested in bottles of wine because I found out that there are bottles of wine out there that are like worth $500,000. And I became really curious about what it would be like to drink, why would you spend $500,000 for a bottle of wine and what would it be like to drink that?
Nobody ever drinks those wines.
I know now people tell me that, but I think that to make an interesting play about it, you would have to eventually open that bottle of wine.
Really? Because you can't mail a letter with the stamps.
Well, that's true. But anyway, I never wrote that play. I did all this research on wine and never quite figured out how to do it. And then I discovered these stamps when I was kind of procrastinating on something I was working on my computer. And I went trolling the internet, and all of a sudden I landed on this website with these stamps, and they seemed so frail and so beautiful and historic, and also so they barely existed. They were so small. And I became interested in how, the website said, one of these stamps was worth $1.4 million. And I was sort of shocked by that outrageous figure attached to such a frail and ephemeral object.
But it's because they have mistakes in them. Something went wrong. Yeah. And to some degree, that's really a playwright's meat, isn't it? Characters who
I was working on it early, I spent a lot of time talking to collectors because once I became interested in these stamps, I became interested in how passionately people could speak about the object that they were collecting. And one of these collectors said to me that sentence, well, it's the errors that make them valuable. And then I could sort of feel the play taking shape around sentences like that.
Bobby, you've said that one of the wonderful things about Teresa's writing is that she doesn't fill in every detail, that the actor is free to create much of the character's life. Mm-hmm. Well, actors always create a kind of an inner life for their characters, but how does it work with what she writes?
Well, she's sort of, she's written a very tightly woven plot, first of all. And beyond that, she just said it. I mean, thematically, the idea that, okay, we have these two, and they're not just any stamps. There are philatelists, and then there are stamps, and then there are these stamps. And these stamps are truly the crown jewel of philately. There are only a few of them known. And so we've already got there built in something that everybody in this play wants. It is a desirable thing, and it is possible to have. And then within that, we just have characters who she's given us the circumstances and given us enough clues that you can really, really create an inner life that is really, truly diverse and different every night.
And all these people are complicated, and they do monstrous things, but we connect to all of them on some level. They all say things that we can relate to them with.
I actually, especially with Bobby and Murray's characters, who are probably the most questionable ethically, but they both have great love in them and great love for those stamps. One of my favorite moments are when Bobby touches the stamps, and then later on when Murray touches the stamps. That there's real. I love the delicacy of that moment and how precious they are to these two. Violent and determined men, and I think that that's something that it reads very elegantly in that space, that people know that these people value something and they value each other. And I actually think that's the other thing I like about Dennis is I think he's very generous of spirit. Finally, you know,
this must have been a complicated play to construct. Some people have compared it to David Mamet. Did you think of him?
Didn't, and I don't. You know, it's funny. Some people have said that to me, and I think they think mostly of American Buffalo, and I'm like, yeah, but American Buffalo is a tragedy, and this is a comedy, and this is a very kind of thriller-like construction, which I also don't see in American Buffalo. I have great.
It's the con on top of the con on top of the con. Kind of thing.
Yeah, but there isn't a con on top of a con in American
Buffalo.
You know, so, but I do think, I mean, I do think that Mamet has been tremendously influential to me and to many writers of my generation in the musicality of his language. And I think I curse very well especially for a woman. And that is where people are finding the association.
I think it's an easy thing to say.
She does write testosterone-filled characters very well, don't you think, Bobby?
But it's unbelievably original, and I don't see the comparisons at all. I think it's an easy thing to say, you know, because there is cursing in it and because there's sort of questionable characters involved and there's a rare thing involved. But I think that's too easy to say. I think the plays are so completely different. I think...
were so surprised, honestly. We were like, really?
Yeah. You said in the Times, Teresa, that you rewrote one scene 37 times.
Yes.
And that was a first for you because of the complications.
You know, it was the first scene between the two sisters, and it was partially because I was having difficulty inhabiting one of the sisters. I found that I didn't like her, and it took me a long time to understand her hunger, and so that took me a while. And then the other thing is I built that scene actually, I freely admit when I steal, and I was stealing wildly from Molière and having two people on the stage talk about a subject that the third person didn't know they were talking about, and so that became wow, no wonder he's called Molière. That's really hard to pull off. I mean, it took me a long time to get the rhythms of it right, like how much they would say to each other, what everybody's motivation was, and what they were trying to get while not revealing what was actually going on to the third person on stage. It was not easy.
And there's a betrayal in every scene. Was that something you knew you were going to do as you were writing the play?
You know, I think people betray each other all the time in all my plays. Because I find it dramatically interesting. So it wasn't a conscious choice for this particular play.
Well, it's interesting that everyone in the play is trying to get what he or she wants or feel that they deserve. And that includes Dennis.
If everybody had listened, everybody would be happy in this thing. Really.
you're feeling very justified.
Yeah. I really do. It's very, very true.
Well, it's a hit, and it's the sort of thing that I guess we should be really grateful to the Manhattan Theater Club for allowing us to do now, because in the past we would have seen this play in their wonderful older theaters, yeah. but maybe 200 people would have been able to see it on any given night. And I don't know how many people could fit into the Biltmore, but it's a lot more than 200 people.
600, yeah, it's a perfect play for that theater. I think it's yeah. such an enjoyable night from beginning to end, stepping foot into that theater and then watching John Lee's set, which is an amazing thing to watch.
It looks like Edward Hopper designed it.
Yeah,
all.
Yeah, it's a fun yeah. night. It's a super fun artist. Night, I think.
And you want yeah. to give us the names of the rest of the cast?
What are those guys' names?
Katie Finneran plays Mary. Yeah, Allison Pill plays Jackie. F. Marie Abraham plays Sterling, and Dylan Baker plays Philip.
And I want to thank both of you, Bobby Cannavale, who plays Dennis, and Teresa Rebeck, who wrote the play, Mauritius.
And Doug Hughes, who directed it brilliantly.
It's at the Biltmore Theater on West 47th Street near 8th Avenue. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you.